Before we go into the Bible study proper, if we go into some of the news items that are occurring, there is one thing that's been in the news a little bit. It was about Ruth Kelly. I think I mentioned this actually last week. The former member of Opus Dei. It says there's nothing sinister about Opus Dei. It says, when I was a member of Opus Dei, a certain sort of person was beastly to me because they hated Opus Dei. They would say, if I had made a mistake, typical Opus Dei. Opus Dei baiting was like Jew baiting. And it goes into the article talking about how people are very, very suspicious of this particular organization. It was interesting. I was looking at, and Ruth Kelly is a government minister who, in fact, is supposed to be a member of this Catholic. It's almost like an evangelical Catholic group within the Catholic Church. If I can give you some of the quotations from the founder of Opus Dei, you can get some kind of an idea of what, in fact, the thinking is behind it. It says, one of the quotations is, "Blessed be pain, loved be pain, sanctified be pain, glorified be pain." In other words, it's not the kind of organization you particularly want to join there for. But in fact, it goes along with the ascetic view. It's a part of a Gnostic heresy that was actually countered by Paul and by the early apostles. It goes all the way back to Babylon. There's two branches of Gnosticism. Gnosticism means Gnostic, means knowledge. And there's two branches. One is that you go ahead and you be Epicurean, where you satiate the senses. And I'd imagine they had an awful lot more in that particular branch than the other one, which was the ascetics that would in fact deny the senses. And it was trying to get enlightenment by these different forms. Opus Dei and the Catholic Church in general is an ascetic organization. This is why Mother Teresa did what she did. This is all part and parcel of it. Another quotation from him says, "No ideal becomes a reality without sacrifice. Deny yourself. It's so beautiful to be the victim." Another one, "Obey with your lips, your heart, your mind. It's not a man who is being obeyed, but God." Now that is more to the point. There's a great hierarchy within Opus Dei, and the confessionals are made only to Opus Dei priests. And in addition to that, all emails, there are different levels, there are all different levels within the organization apparently. And emails, letters, correspondence are actually under scrutiny by the one above. Now here is a government minister, a member of that. What kind of emails, letters, and everything else, and where is that information going? That's the problem. That's a large degree of the problem, and it's a secret thing. You don't know whether this is actually happening, because it is something within the Catholic Church. And you think, well, what in fact is she privy to? But we need to be, she's an education secretary at the moment. But within that, where does she therefore end up? And because once you're in the government ministry, and again, Mr. Blair is very pro-Catholic. So it's something to keep an eye on. It's something to be aware of. Another quotation, "What has been lost through the flesh should pay back, be generous in your peasant penance." And they beat themselves and they have, you know, spikes on their legs and all this kind of stuff to try and get this kind of penance, this ascetic view of life. But as I say, the problem comes in the hierarchical concepts and the way in which information has got to be passed up the line, and it because of the secrecy that is there and what is actually coming out of the government across into the Catholic realm. And this is something that we need to be aware of and just keep an eye on, certainly at this particular time, because we know what the prophecies indicate. Another area that I think that has been in the news recently, there's the tsunami. But the way in which the tsunami could have been, to some degree, prevented, or not the tsunami prevented, but the actual devastation and damage prevented. I've got an article here from last Sabbath, where it's talking about the mangrove forest formed a barrier and saved lives. It says Southern Asia's coastlines where mangrove forests had been destroyed to make way for hotels and fish farming experienced a greater loss of life in the tsunami than where they'd been preserved, scientists claimed yesterday. So when you've got the mangroves, which are heavy root systems, large trees, the tsunami comes through. It's like when you have a garden. If you have a garden and you have a hedge, the wind comes through and the wind is then broken up by the hedge. And in exactly the same way, the tsunami comes through, it is broken up by the mangrove forest. And you wonder whether in fact that is something that God has designed into the system in such areas. I can't say whether it is or it isn't, but it is interesting, this article. I won't go and read that much of it, but just the fact that the mangroves, where the mangrove forests were, they didn't have the same kind of devastation as they did where they put the hotels up and knocked them all down and pulled in the beach. Another one about Africa and Africa's problems. This is by W.F. Deeds, who's a very, he's an elderly correspondent. I think he's actually in his 80s, if he's not even 90s, I think he is now, but he's still keeping on writing his articles. But he mentions Africa's problems are man-made, unlike Asia's. Now, the politicians have tended to equate the third world debt and saying, right, we must get rid of third, or not politicians, but people have been calling for the elimination of third world debt as a solution to the problem of the devastation caused by the tsunami. And the third world debt, obviously, they're saying, well, this is a problem for Africa's difficulty. He makes the comment, he says, so pleading for Africa's plight without reference to that continent's self-inflicted wounds, as Bill Gates and Bono did on this page a week ago, is to issue a false prospectus. Africa's epidemics, malaria, cholera, typhoid and AIDS, are not going to be beaten by grand gestures from the West. The problem with these diseases is not medically technical. It lies in Africa's attitudes, which tend to be fatalistic. What a contrast we see between Mandela's open admission about his son and also Mbeki's obscurism about AIDS. When you talk about putting Africa to rights, Mr. Blair, walk more humbly, and Chancellor, drop this hyperbole about martial aid because it's nonsense. And he goes into this particular section. He says, there's no compromise to be made between the thousands of lives lost, or comparison to be made between the thousand lives lost in the natural disaster and the poverty of Africa, for which Africa's rulers share blame. I've traveled through enough of it in recent years to learn how deep-seated and self-imposed are some of that continent's ills. To imply that they can be set right by a crusade to relieve debt or more generous trading terms or by giving more aid is misleading, though not untypical of our present style of government, which has become alarmingly messianic. And this is, they're trying to say, well, we can go ahead and we can solve Africa's problems purely by relieving third world debt, and that's not going to solve the problem. The problem lies very much within government. It lies very much within, Nigeria is one case in point. Nigeria is a fabulously wealthy country, fabulously wealthy, but the money doesn't go anywhere to the people. It goes to, well, it goes to some people, but it doesn't go to the people generally. Another interesting one, again on these, the kind of aftermath of the tsunami disaster. It says, German reinsurer Munich Re will today issue a report pinpointing Tokyo as the world's next natural disaster flashpoint that could plunge the world into global recession. Because Tokyo, apparently, it goes on, it says, speaking on the 10th anniversary of the last major earthquake in the area, the Kobe tragedy, that claimed the lives of more than 6,000 with economic losses of $100 billion, the representatives of the insurer will call for more risk awareness and greater transparency to expose the real nature of potential hazards in large cities. And Tokyo is a center of that. They said that it's such a catastrophe, it says, you know, if the the kind of catastrophe they're expecting could be equal, if not double, that suffered in 1923. A hit would not only devastate Japan, but as the center of the globe's second biggest economy by far, a crippled Tokyo could plunge the world's markets into the abyss. So there's another area to be watching, because, again, you're looking at Japan being linked to the United States. And there are many things like this that there are potential triggers that could perhaps trigger. It's almost as if there'll probably be a number of triggers that will come together. That's the most likely scenario that we can see at the moment, is a number of things that would come together that would cause the present bubble to collapse. And all the time, we see within the world other areas that are taking place, other areas that we need to be focusing on. One is China. There's an article here from the Greenville News. It was passed to me by somebody, but it says about China deals with its Tower of Babel, which is interesting. It's talking about diversity in linguistics. It says, Shanghai, China, thousands of years of Chinese linguistic heritage have come down to this, a squabble over Tom and Jerry. Dubbed into regional Chinese dialects, the warring cat and mouse have been huge TV hits and a good way to pass homegrown culture down to the younger generation, programmers say. But not so fast, say the central government of North in Beijing, which for decades has promoted standard Mandarin as the only Chinese language worthy of the airwaves. And the State Administration of Radio, Film and Television has ordered an end to broadcasting in dialect, saying kids should be raised in a favorable linguistic environment. So they have their own problems. There's a problem, again, in many cases, you see something that is holding a nation back, and there's one thing that is holding China back currently. However, there are other areas that are, in fact, still surging on. As far as the actual amount of work that is going to China. There was a newscast or a news piece. It was a program anyway on the television last week, was it? And the week before. It's a series about the ships that are being built and these different types of ships and these super tankers and so on. A lot of this is all in that area of Asia, and China is getting involved in many. Of these areas. It says, in roaring China, sweaters are west of Sauk City. It says, you probably have never heard of this factory, Deting. It says, oh, this factory town in coastal China, and there's no reason why you should have, but it fills your sock drawer. That is Detang in China. It says, Detang produces an astounding 9 billion pairs of socks every year. 9 billion. It says more than one set for every person on the planet. So if you've got a pair of socks on at the moment, the chances are it was made in Dating. It says people here fondly call it Sock City, and its annual Socks Festival attracts 100,000 buyers from around the world. You know, it's by highlighting something like this, which is mundane, and then realizing just the amount of material that is flowing into that, just in that one area, in just the socks that we're wearing. But it's not just socks. You're also going into so many other areas as well. I was talking to somebody at one time about the fastenings, and the vast majority of the world's fastenings, the things that keep things together, whatever the fastenings might be. It's not just fastenings like press studs and things on your clothes, but there's fastenings in industry, in car manufacturing, in bolts and nuts, and all this type of fastening is coming out of China. And again, the Western industries are relying on this to a large degree. And yet, at the same time, we get articles like this, the US fury at the EU weapons for China. America is waging an intense behind-the-scenes battle to stop the European Union lifting its 15-year-old arms embargo against China, warning Britain that it will not tolerate the prospect of a European military technology being used to threaten its soldiers in the Far East. So it can see technology filtering across to this emerging superpower. As Jack Straw, the Foreign Secretary, prepares to travel to Beijing next week to discuss ending the arms ban, the Daily Telegraph has learned that the Bush administration is alarmed by Tony Blair's cave-in to the French and German pressure. Again, notice where it's coming from. Japan has also expressed dismay over the EU's moves dramatically to upgrade relations with Beijing, and the Tories have warned the government that it is creating a major breach with Washington and endangering vital exchanges of military technology between Britain and America. So, again, It's another in the looking at Isaiah 9. There is perhaps right at the very end some kind of a problem between Ephraim and Manasseh. It seems as if that might be the case, which makes us even weaker in that regard. Another one, Israel acts to halt the sales of missiles to Syria. This is from the 13th of this month. It says, Israel was attempting yesterday to halt a weapons deal under which Russia agreed to supply Syria with advanced anti-aircraft missiles. Israel fears that the weapons may fall into the hands of the Palestinian militants and may ask Washington to intervene to halt the sale of Iglia SA-18s to Damascus, the Israeli Vice Prime Minister Sharon Peres said. We have enough problems on the ground with Syria, and we don't need more problems from the sky. The Foreign Minister, Silvam Shalom, stressed that Israel has cordial relations with Russia and hope to resolve the matter. It says the Iglia SA-18, which costs £130,000 each, is one of the most sophisticated shoulder-held anti-aircraft missiles on the market. Military analysts say that the weapon of choice for many militants because of its simplicity and built-in training system. The SA-18 can also cut through many Western defenses. It's resistant to most of the flares used to put anti-aircraft missiles off the track. And Israeli officials who said that the deal was signed several days ago are worried that the anti-aircraft missile would reach the Lebanese Hezbollah guerrillas who have attacked Israel's northern border. Richard Boker, the U.S. State Department spokesman, said that America opposed the deal, saying we're against the sale of lethal military equipment to Syria, which is a state sponsor of terrorism, and the Russians know about this policy. And again, well, let's just read what it says over in Isaiah 9 yet again, and just remind ourselves that one particular, over in Isaiah 9, it says, therefore the Eternal shall set up the adversaries of Rezin, verse 11, against him and join his enemies together. He'll join his enemies together. And Rezin was the king of Syria. That's who Rezin was. The Syrians before, the Philistines or the Palestinians, as far as we know, that's where they are today. The Palestinians behind, and they will devour Israel with open mouth. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. In other words, he's going to do even more. And then it goes on a little bit more. Now, there seems to be within these verses a great deal more than just these missiles. But the fact that there is a conflict there, and Israel is very upset about it, America is upset about it, and Russia is also supplying those missiles, and they're shoulder launched. And in addition to that, they are effective against military aircraft within the West. It is significant. So, for what it's worth. Another one that's significant, Wednesday, January the 5th, so it's a little while ago now. It says, German jobless hits a seven-year high. It says, the protesters clash with Berlin police as the benefit cuts bite. It says, the number of people looking for work in Germany has risen to its highest level in 7 years as bad weather and sluggish growth caused the dole queues to swell at the end of the last year. The unemployment rate in Europe's biggest economy surged to 10.8% last month, the Federal Labour Office reported yesterday, to considerable public consternation. So, again, be aware that something is going to happen regarding Germany. The present government within Germany is not going to stay there. There's going to be a different form of government, not just Germany, but within Europe generally. You're looking at a different form of government that will come to the fore. In this area, you have another one. This is from Monday, January the 17th. It says, Germany's two main far-right parties signed a cooperation deal at the weekend to boost their chances of the general election due next year. So we have this getting together of the factions of the far-right. It says, German People's Union candidates will campaign on the ticket of the larger National Democratic Party, and the NPD won only 0.4% of the 2002 election, and the People's Union didn't even compete. But they began discussing cooperation after both received a boost in state elections in September, scoring surprisingly well in two economically downtrodden eastern areas, and both parties won seats in the regional parliaments. Now remember, Hitler came to power by democratic means. Now, I'm not saying that these particular far-right parties are going to be the far-right parties that will be there at that time. We don't know. But we do know that it is right-wing that will actually be there. So again, it's a case of noticing these things within the news and being aware of them and noticing what is significant. Another one from Tuesday, January the 18th. It says, America has hobbled an effort by Britain and other European countries to persuade Iran to freeze its nuclear program. So here it says, Bush blocks the Euro plan to woo Iran over a nuclear freeze. It says, senior officials said privately that America would not offer economic or political concessions to woo Tehran. President George Bush is trying to improve relations with Europe and will visit London and Brussels next month. And it goes on, it says, Iran is widely believed to be pursuing a secret program to build a nuclear bomb. The nation says that it seeks only to develop nuclear power to save its oil reserves. But under an agreement in November between Iran and Britain, France and Germany, Tehran was spared a referral to the Security Council after it agreed to suspend voluntarily the most sensitive parts of its nuclear program, the enrichment of uranium and the reprocessing of plutonium. And again, as I mentioned before, we need to be aware that the newer forms of nuclear weapons may not even need that type of plutonium and so on, enrichment. You're looking from, it could, by laser technology, you could well have the, or other kind of microwave technology or whatever, you could in fact activate a hydrogen, a fusion reaction within within a bomb. So that is certainly something that we need to be aware of, that there's bubbling over there at the moment. Right, the final one I want to deal with, it's just a small little news clipping in January the 19th. And in order to do this, turn over to Matthew 24. In Matthew 24. See, people look at all the various parts of the world and they look at what's happening in Europe, they look at what's happening in China. Certainly China is very significant to the world at large, and it is significant. It is going to be a very powerful, it's going to be the final force on the earth with Europe that will bring the world down to its destruction were it not for Christ's intervention. But here in Matthew 24, the thing that will trigger it, the thing that we are watching for, that we are looking for within the world, it says in verse 15, it says, when you shall therefore see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, whoever reads, and that means reads Daniel, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him that is on the housetop not come down to take anything of his house. Neither let him come into the field turn back to take his clothes. And woe to them with child, but pray that your flight's not in the winter, because then shall be great trial, great tribulation, such as are not since the beginning of the world to the time, nor ever shall be. And unless the days are shortened, no flesh is going to save alive. So the key event is this abomination that makes desolate. And if we go over to Daniel chapter 12, in Daniel chapter 12, we find these days of Daniel, which I've mentioned several times before. It's in the context, as it says in verse 7, where he says that he heard a man, in verse 6, it says, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And I heard a man clothed in linen, which was upon the water of the river, held his right hand and his left at heaven, and swore by him that lives forever, it will be a time, times and a half. Now, this is in the context of, as it says in verse 1, it says, and then shall Michael stand up, the great prince that stands for the children of his people, your people, and there will be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation to that time, and at that time your people will be delivered. So we're looking at that particular specific event, the great tribulation, that is mentioned over in Matthew 25. But here in verse 7, it talks about how when he's accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, the shattering of the holy people, and we've seen that within the church, and we look at our own particular group here, and we're looking at a shattering of the holy people, then all these things will be finished. We're looking at, you say, when, you know, does that mean right at the very end? Well, it can't be, because we're talking about the church fleeing and the church going to a place of safety. And he says, I heard and I didn't understand. They said, oh Lord, what shall be the end of these things? He said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many will be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked will do wickedly, and none of the wicked will understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there'll be 1,290 days. Now that is what we're looking at, the abomination that makes desolate. We're looking at 1,290 days, and we're looking at, it talks about how the fleeing actually takes place at that time. We understand that to be the abomination that makes desolate. What that actually is referring to, you find over in Luke 21. In Luke 21. And notice what it says here. The time that the daily sacrifice, or the daily, shall be taken away, or the evenings and mornings will be taken away, there'll be 1,290 days. In Luke 21, the abomination that causes this sacrifice to stop, to halt, we find here in verse 19, it says, in your patience possess you your souls, and when you will see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know its desolation thereof is nigh. Then let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let them that are in the midst of it depart out. So it's the actual surrounding of Jerusalem with armies, which is the abomination. I bring all this out because here in January the 19th, it says the rabbis ban the Jews from the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is still a crucial place within the world. It says Israel's leading rabbis have issued a ruling forbidding Jews from entering the disputed Temple Mount in Jerusalem amid concerns about the desecration of the sacred site. The ruling is a direct challenge to Messianic Jews and hardline groups such as the Temple Mount faithful who want access. So we're looking at this conflict that is there within Jerusalem, and they are actually making a ruling. Now the reason they're making a ruling is because the Temple Mount faithful have, as I understand it, have threatened to go ahead, come Passover, start sacrificing. And I say start sacrificing, start by sacrificing the Passover lamb. Now that is not the evening and mornings. That is not the evening and morning sacrifice. But it's a step in that direction. Now they are trying to stop this. And so here is this confrontation happening. It says the mount, known to the Muslims as Haram al-Sharif, or the noble sanctuary, is a biblical Mount Moriah, and it's sacred to Jews, Muslims and Christians. The Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, Islam's third holiest site, is purportedly built over the ruins of the biblical Jewish temples, Judaism's holiest site. Well, it's not. It's not the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's the Dome of the Rock that's over that. I mean, whoever did the research for the article didn't get it right. But the Al-Aqsa Mosque is just slightly south of the Dome of the Rock. There is conflict in this area. And they are trying to make sure that the Messianic Jews and the Temple Mount faithful and other groups like this, and these are backed by fundamentalist Christians, by the way. Some of those fundamentalist Christians have been formally associated with us within Worldwide Church of God as well. Now that is significant, and that also makes me wonder as to why are we hated by all nations? What is it that's going to cause that? And I wonder. I look at this and I look at what's happening, and certain of these groups, I say, do have links across to us. And I just wonder with it. It's significant. It's not there yet. There is conflict about it. They're trying to stop it. But you know, the concept of having a Passover sacrifice is a step in the direction that is going to occur. Sometime there are going to be sacrifices started in and around that area. They're not just going to be Passover sacrifices. They're going to be evening and morning sacrifices. They're going to be regular sacrifices day by day. It's when that is stopped by an army surrounding Jerusalem that the actual fleeing is going to take place. It's all around that time. So again, it's a thing to we need to be watching, not becoming alarmed, but watching, being alert, and recognizing the times in which we're living.